This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We've talked a lot in recent weeks about the impact of a global pandemic on this presidential election year. But what about the broad social justice movement we've seen sweeping across the nation this spring and summer in the wake of the killing of George Floyd? Do months of protest in the street and a bubbling over of violence translate into anything tangible at the polls? Well, the answer is yes, but it may not manifest in quite the way you'd expect. Ken Coleman is a journalist with Michigan Advance. He's also a student of Detroit history and the author of several books, including On This Day, African-American Life in Detroit. Ken Coleman, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to talk to you about the presidential election of 1968. This is the year when Richard Nixon was running against Hubert Humphrey. And it came just 1 year after the massive civil unrest of the summer of 1967 in Detroit. It's what people in the city refer to as the uprising or the rebellion. Can you take us back to what the political landscape looked like in Detroit and in Michigan at that time?
Absolutely. What Detroit looked like in 1968, even coming off the rebellion year of 1967, was still a city where elected leadership was largely lily white. While there had been a sprinkle of African Americans who had been elected throughout the 1960s, the city, in the eyes of Blacks and perhaps other minorities too, was not a city government that was representative of them, and it didn't look like them. In 1968, Detroit still had a white mayor, a white governor, a majority city council, the city's legislative body. A couple of judgeships were held by African Americans, but there was a tremendous mistrust that African Americans had toward government because it didn't look like them. And after all, coming after the 67 rebellion, what they were reminded of and what the country and the world saw was that white police enforced havoc or invoked havoc on African American communities far too often. And there was a lot of rage in the Black community.
Yeah. So the bigger lens on this has to include also the divisions in the country over the Vietnam War and just a big generational divide. Can you tell us about how the presidential candidates in 68 talked about some of these issues?
Absolutely. I mean, 68 was a sort of very seminal year in American politics, presidential politics, because Vietnam was happening. People forget, as the year starts out in 1968, you have Lyndon Baines Johnson, who is expected to run for re-election for a second full term. But the Vietnam War goes badly. And in March of 1968, the sitting president of the United States, who was expected to run for re-election, announced that he would not. That's how formidable the Vietnam War or conflict was in presidential politics. It essentially drove a sitting president out of office. What comes out of that, obviously, with the U.S. president, who was a Democrat, not running, it opens up the door for several Democrats. Some of them are anti-war candidates. Some of them are more middle of the road, but you see people like Humphrey, Hubert Humphrey, Robert F. Kennedy get in the race. And, you know, it opens up a clear divide between where the country is going in terms of civil rights and the war, and how does America through the presidency affect it. And so on the other side, you get Richard Nixon, who was a former vice president and a former governor of California, really run on what we come to know, what's come to be known as both, I call both the Southern strategy of winning presidential elections and really an attack on, or at least an effort to lift up law and order. And Nixon runs on that law and order platform, really is this sort of remnants of the beginning, of the Southern strategy, meaning either Democrat or Republicans looking for votes in the South, the disaffected South that has spent several years losing battles on civil rights, and a lot of that constituency being white and feeling like they're losing ground in America to Blacks and other minorities.
I wonder how the contest in 68 brought different people on and off the sidelines. I was thinking about the union leader, Walter Reuther, who is sort of the father of the UAW, and who had marched with Dr. King several times and often took flack from white colleagues for his insistence of sticking with the civil rights movement. Is there anything you can tell us about sort of how various moderates on the left and the right were sort of lining up that year?
Sure. Reuther is an interesting case because he assumes the presidency of the UAW in the late 1940s, but was very much cool politically to leftist movements and progressive movements. As you point out, he was very much a moderate, and that sometimes put him in challenging positions both on the right and the left. You know, working class whites who worked in plants, who were concerned about the civil rights movement or concerned about the future of their jobs or concerned about the racial complexion of their neighborhoods, began to become increasingly cool to people like Walter Reuther. And so Reuther was sort of caught in the middle, certainly participated in the seminal Walk for Freedom in Detroit in 1963, as you pointed out, marching with Dr. Martin Luther King and Mayor Jerry Cavanaugh of Detroit. He certainly marched in that seminal event in 1963 in Detroit. But people like Reuther saw America changing too. And being the leader of the UAW and plants all over the country, obviously at that time, still a lot of them, maybe even most of them in Detroit or in the Rust Belt, he saw the change in complexion. And that set up a dynamic that doesn't manifest itself in 1968, but certainly does by the 1980s in the phenomena that we know as Reagan Democrats, disaffected white labor workers, and at least in terms of our state, you know, people that lived in places like Macomb County, who had traditionally voted Democrat, but became disaffected by the civil rights movement, the uprisings like Detroit in 1967, became inspired by presidencies like Richard Nixon's in 1968, and most certainly by 1980, Ronald Reagan.
When the votes were finally tabulated in November, Richard Nixon defeated Hubert Humphrey. Ken, there was obviously a lot going on in this election, but what do you think were the deciding factors?
Law and order. Certainly a response to what some folk like Richard Nixon thought was upheaval going on in America. The uprising by African Americans in major cities like Detroit, Cleveland, Los Angeles, and New York. But also a visceral, violent response against the Summer of Love in 1967 and counterculture politics. Mm-hmm. Nixon, even during his presidency, sort of pushing back against the hippies, whites that were fighting, against the Vietnam, whites and others who were fighting against the Vietnam War, but also a feeling that civil rights movement was moving too far to the left and moving too fast for America. And as I mentioned earlier, it really is 1968 when you go back and look at it and what it became, really the start of that Southern strategy. People like the Republican operative Lee Atwater, who is very prominent in Republican politics in the 1980s. Those people were inspired by both the Goldwater presidency in 1964 and most certainly the Nixon campaign and presidency that began in January of 1969.
Did civil rights get other kinds of attention that year beyond the presidential race that might be important in hindsight?
You know, we often talk about the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the 1965 Voting Rights Act, but the Housing Act of 1968 was huge. And to draw another Michigan titan into this conversation is George Romney. George Romney is governor of Michigan during most of the 1960s, but in 1968 is tapped by President-elect Richard Nixon to serve as his first Housing and Urban Development Director, a brand new agency starting in federal government. And Romney is somebody who is really sort of tailor-made for that position, although he and Nixon had been rivals, political rivals, through much of the 1960s. Romney was considered a viable presidential candidate both in 1964 and 1968. Ultimately, some of his comments about Vietnam after a trip to Vietnam really sort of declared Romney's presidential aspirations as null and void. But although they had been rivals, political rivals, Nixon taps Romney, and Romney, as the HUD director, House and Urban Development Director, really sort of seeks out a policy position that he had all along throughout the 1960s, and being a big supporter of open housing. Romney, in 1963, had marched with the NAACP and Lily White Grosse Pointe, advocating for open housing. Well, Romney took that policy position with him into the Nixon administration and ultimately clashed with the administration on open housing federal policy. And this was at a time when Nixon was not only had a go slow or negative approach to open housing, he was also taking a position against busing, public school busing. And so 1968 has a very sort of significant role in Michigan politics because of some of the players that were involved, you know, leading up to 1968, serving with President Nixon beginning in 1969, and what we, you know, ended up seeing continual civil rights policies toward open housing, but also a clash that ultimately ends with a Supreme Court decision on public school busing in 1974.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Ken Coleman. He writes for Michigan Advance and also researches and writes about Detroit history. So back in Detroit, Coleman Young became the mayor of the city a few years after 1967. And you can just really see the thread of 67 running through city politics for years afterward. Are there other ways other than Coleman Young that you see things starting to change?
Sure. Coleman Young had always been a progressive Democrat, really sort of been an outcast in established Democratic Party politics because of his strong union ties. People may not realize that Coleman Young came into age in the 1940s, even pre the George McCarthy era. There was sort of a sense that there was an element of the union movement that was socialist and even communist. Coleman Young was thought to be part of that group. And so he wasn't a mainstream Democrat, even as a Michigan State Senator. What 1968 offers Detroit is a city that by 1970 is really about 50-50 between Black and white. And even with citywide elections, African Americans begin to increase their numbers and the number of elected officials. Also, what happens is, in part after 1967, a movement that really kind of starts in Black power politics, even a more rebuff of police and law enforcement. By 1973, the city charter, the city's constitution, changes. And what is created is a civilian body that oversees what had been a Lily White police force. And that culminates with Coleman Young's election and Coleman Young being able to appoint this 5-member civilian police commission that polices the police. And so for the first time, African Americans begin to have a comfort level and a confidence in the force that oversees and polices the city, because you have an African-American mayor with a still a majority white police force, but in successive years becomes more and more African-American. That is a development that has its roots in 1967 rebellion politics and in 1968 Michigan presidential politics.
You know, Ken, so much of the stories that you're telling us seem to echo in a couple of things that have happened over the past 4 years leading up to this presidential election. The concerns about police use of force and power the concerns about representation in office, the concerns about whether representation for Black Michiganders in office does even really lead to change. To this day, there's still people asking if civil rights has ever been more than a talking point in mainstream American politics. Given everything that you've read about 67 and what came after, how do you answer that question?
History is a set of events that builds on itself. Movements are created. They change over time. They may languish at times, but become reinvigorated. You know, the sort of striking similarity between 1968 and what we've seen in 2020 thus far is, you know, the real similarity in, you know, this study and this look at how America polices communities and the reaction on both sides to how that's being carried out. Striking similarities in 68 and 2020. So much so, this summer I covered a series of protests by a Detroit-based group that really began to hold daily protests and rallies after George Floyd killing. There had been a conversation between one of the activists involved in this group, Detroit Will Breathe, and a Detroit African-American activist who was very prominent in 1967. They had a conversation. Dan Aldrich, the 1967 activist, said to Detroit Will Breathe, "You ought to consider having a public mock tribunal that brings law enforcement to be analyzed and adjudicated in a public forum for the actions that they've carried out."
To call them to account.
To call them to account is a better way. Absolutely. Yeah. Call them to account. But in interviewing people from both generations, realized that there was a lot of commonality. And some things had changed, obviously. Detroit had elected an African-American mayor several years later. In 2008, America had elected an African-American president. But there was still a disconnect and a divide between everyday people and the law enforcement agency that polices that neighborhood or that community.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think I'm hearing you paraphrase Mark Twain, that history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes.
Absolutely. Twain was onto something there.
Ken Coleman covers Southeast Michigan, Economic Justice and Civil Rights for Michigan Advance. He's also the author of several books, including Soul on Air, Blacks Who Helped Define Radio in Detroit. Ken, thanks for taking some time with us on Election Day, and be safe out there.
I appreciate it. Thank you much.